Thinking over what I've told you so far, I see I've given the impression that the events of three nights, several weeks apart, were all that absorbed me. On the contrary, they were merely casual events in a crowded summer, and, until much later, they absorbed me infinitely less than my personal affairs. Most of the time I worked. In the early morning, the sun threw my shadow westward as I hurried down the white chasms of Lower New York to the Probity Trust. I even had a short affair with a girl who lived in Jersey City and worked in the accounting department, but her brother began throwing mean looks in my direction, so when she went on her vacation in July, I let it blow quietly away. I began to like New York, the racy, adventurous feel of it at night, and the satisfaction that the constant flicker of men and women and machines gives to the restless eye. I liked to walk up Fifth Avenue and pick out romantic women from the crowd and imagine that in a few minutes I was going to enter into their lives, and no one would ever know or disapprove. At the enchanted metropolitan twilight, I felt a haunting loneliness sometimes, and felt it in others. Again at 8 o'clock, when the dark lanes of the 40s were lined 5 deep with throbbing taxicabs bound for the theater district, I felt a sinking in my heart. Forms leaned together in the taxis as they waited, and there was laughter from unheard jokes, and lighted cigarettes made unintelligible circles inside. Imagining that I, too, was hurrying towards gaiety and sharing their intimate excitement, I wished them well. For a while I lost sight of Jordan Baker, and then in midsummer I found her again. At first I was flattered to go places with her, because she was a golf champion and everyone knew her name. Then it was something more. I wasn't actually in love, but I felt a sort of tender curiosity. The bored, haughty face that she turned to the world concealed something, and one day I found what it was. She left a borrowed car out in the rain with the top down and then lied about it. Jordan Baker was incurably dishonest. I suppose she had begun dealing in subterfuges when she was very young in order to keep that cool, insolent smile turned to the world and yet satisfy the demands of her hard, jaunty body. It made no difference to me. Dishonesty in a woman is a thing you never blame deeply. I was casually sorry, and then I forgot. Once I wrote down on the empty spaces of a timetable the names of those who came to Gatsby's house that summer. It's disintegrating at its folds now, but I can still read the gray names of those who accepted Gatsby's hospitality and paid him the subtle tribute of knowing nothing whatever about him. From East Egg came the Chester Beckers and the Leeches, and Dr. Webster Civet, who was drowned last summer up in Maine, and the Hornbeams and the Willie Voltaires, and a whole clan named Black Buck, and the Ismays and the Christies and Edgar Beaver. From farther out on the island came the Cheadles and the O.R.P. Schraders and the Stonewall Jackson Abrams of Georgia, and the Fishguards and the Ripley Snells. From West Egg came the Poles and the Mulradys and Cecil Roebuck and Cecil Shane and Gulick, the state senator, and Newton Orchid, who controlled films par excellence. A man named Clipspringer was there so often he became known as the Border. I doubt if he had any other home. From New York were the Cromes and the Backhissons and the Denikers and Russell Betty and Henry L. Palmetto, who killed himself by jumping in front of a subway train in Times Square. At 9 o'clock, one morning late in July, Gatsby's gorgeous car lurched up the rocky drive to my door and gave out a burst of melody from its three-noted horn. It was the first time he had called on me, though I had gone to two of his parties, mounted in his hydroplane and, at his urgent invitation, made frequent use of his beach. "Good morning, old sport. You're having lunch with me today, and I thought we'd ride up together." He saw me looking with admiration at his car. "It's pretty, isn't it, old sport?" It was a rich cream color, bright with nickel, swollen here and there in its monstrous length, with triumphant hat boxes and supper boxes and tool boxes, and terraced with a labyrinth of windshields that mirrored a dozen suns. Sitting down behind many layers of glass in a sort of green leather conservatory, he started to town. We hadn't reached West Egg Village before Gatsby broke out surprisingly. "Look here, old sport. What's your opinion of me, anyhow?" A little overwhelmed, I began the generalized evasions which that question deserves. "Well, I'm going to tell you something about my life," he interrupted. I don't want you to get the wrong idea of me from all these stories you hear. So he was aware of the bizarre accusations that flavored conversation in his halls. I'll tell you God's truth. His right hand suddenly ordered divine retribution to stand by. I am the son of some wealthy people in the Middle West, all dead now. I was brought up in America, but educated at Oxford, because all my ancestors have been educated there for many years. It's a family tradition. He looked at me sideways, and I knew why Jordan Baker had believed he was lying, and I wondered if there wasn't something a little sinister about him after all. My family all died, and I came into a good deal of money. For a moment, I suspected that he was pulling my leg, but a glance at him convinced me otherwise. After that, I lived like a young rajah in all the capitals of Europe, Paris, Venice, Rome, collecting jewels, hunting big game, painting a little, and trying to forget something very sad that had happened to me long ago. With an effort, I managed to restrain my incredulous laughter. The phrases were so threadbare. Then came the war, old sport. It was a great relief, and I tried very hard to die, but I seemed to bear an enchanted life. I accepted a commission as first lieutenant when it began. In the Argonne Forest, I took the remains of my machine gun battalion so far forward that there was a half-mile gap on either side of us where the infantry couldn't advance. We stayed there 2 days and two nights, 130 men with 16 Lewis guns, and when the infantry came up at last, they found the insignia of three German divisions among the piles of dead. I was promoted to be a major, and every Allied government gave me a decoration, even Montenegro, little Montenegro down on the Adriatic Sea. He reached in his pocket, and a piece of metal slung on ribbon fell onto my palm. That's the one from Montenegro. To my astonishment, the thing had an authentic look. Orderi di Danilo, ran the circular legend. Montenegro, Nicholas Rex. Turn it. Major J. Gatsby, I read. For valor extraordinary. Here's another thing I always carry. A souvenir of Oxford days. It was taken in Trinity Quad. The man on my left is now the Earl of Doncaster. It was a photograph of half a dozen young men in blazers loafing in an archway through which were visible a host of spires. There was Gatsby, looking a little, not much, younger, with a cricket bat in his hand. Then it was all true. I saw the skins of tigers flaming in his palace on the Grand Canal. I saw him opening a chest of rubies to ease, with their crimson-lighted depths, the gnawings of his broken heart. His correctness grew on him as we neared the city. Then the Valley of Ashes opened out onto both sides of us, and I had a glimpse of Mrs. Wilson straining at the garage pump with panting vitality as we went by. Roaring noon. In a well-fanned 42nd Street cellar, I met Gatsby for lunch. Blinking away the brightness of the street outside, my eyes picked him out obscurely in the anteroom, talking to another man. Mr. Carraway, this is my friend, Mr. Wolfsheim. A small man raised his large head and regarded me. So I took one look at him, said Mr. Wolfsheim, shaking my hand earnestly. And what do you think I did? What? I inquired politely. But evidently he was not addressing me, for he dropped my hand. I handed the money to Catspaw, and I said, All right, Catspaw, don't pay him a penny till he shuts his mouth. He shut it then and there. Gatsby took an arm of each of us and moved forward into the restaurant. Highballs? Asked the head waiter. This is a nice restaurant here, said Mr. Wolfsheim, looking at the Presbyterian nymphs on the ceiling. But I like across the street better. Yes, highballs, agreed Gatsby, and then to Mr. Wolfsheim. It's too hot over there. Hot and small, yes, said Mr. Wolfsheim, but full of memories. What place is that? I asked. The old Metropole, said Gatsby. The old Metropole, brooded Mr. Wolfsheim. Filled with faces dead and gone. Filled with friends gone now forever. I can't forget so long as I live the night they shot Rosie Rosenthal there. It was six of us at the table, and Rosie had eaten and drunk a lot all evening. When it was almost morning, the waiter came up to him with a funny look and says somebody wants to speak to him outside. All right, says Rosie, and begins to get up. and I pulled him down in his chair. Let the bastards come in here if they want you, Rosie, but don't you so help me move outside this room. Did he go? I asked. Sure he went. He turned around in the door and says, don't let that waiter take away my coffee. Then he went out on the sidewalk and they shot him 3 times in his full belly and drove away.
4 of them were electrocuted, I said, remembering.
5 with Becca.
A succulent hash arrived, and Mr. Wolfsheim, forgetting the more sentimental atmosphere of the old metropole, began to eat with ferocious delicacy. His eyes, meanwhile, roved very slowly all around the room. He completed the arc by turning to inspect the people directly behind him. I think that, except for my presence, he would have taken 1 short glance beneath our own table. Finally, he drank his coffee with a jerk and got to his feet.
I've enjoyed my lunch, he said, and I'm going to run off from you 2 young men before I outstay my welcome.
Don't hurry, Maya, said Gatsby.
Mr. Wolfsheim raised his hand in a sort of benediction.
You're very polite, but I belong to another generation. You sit here and discuss your sports and your young ladies and your...
He supplied an imaginary noun with another wave of his hand.
As for me, I am 50 years old, and I won't impose myself on you any longer.
Who is he? I asked.
Maya Wolfsheim? He's a gambler.
Gatsby hesitated, then added, he's the man who fixed the World Series back in 1919.
Fixed the World Series, I repeated. Why isn't he in jail?
Well, they can't get him, old sport. He's a smart man.
I insisted on paying the check. As the waiter brought my change, I caught sight of Tom Buchanan across the crowded room. Come along with me for a minute, I said. I've got to say hello to someone. When he saw us, Tom jumped up and took 6 steps in our direction.
Where have you been? Daisy's furious because you haven't called up.
This is Mr. Gatsby, Mr. Buchanan. They shook hands briefly, and a strained, unfamiliar look of embarrassment came over Gatsby's face.
How have you been, anyhow? Demanded Tom of me. How'd you happen to come up this far to eat?
I've been having lunch with Mr. Gatsby. I turned toward Mr. Gatsby, but he was no longer there.